Good afternoon. Welcome all to WebCamp. We're going to talk about how object-oriented JavaScript can help your HTML5 website. So basically what we're going to talk about is I'll be talking about who we are, pretty much just to get that out of the way. And my colleague Bram here will be doing all of the talks about object-oriented JavaScript, what it is, how we've used it in FrameRateFest, which is actually a pretty cool website we made, mainly for the Dutch audience. But yeah. And then there will also be we'll be talking about a live app that we've done, or that Bram has made, and he'll be talking about how he made it and how he used JavaScript and HTML5 to do that. So, just to get it out of the way, who's these days? Well, we're actually those guys. We're the people working there. And we're a full-service communications agency or company. We're based in Antwerp and in Amsterdam. We're also part of the Wunderman group, so we're located across the globe as well. And we have three websites that you might want to check out. First one's thesedays.com. The other one is Labs, where the code monkeys get to play. And Playground as well is where we post experiments that can be regarding JavaScript, can also be Flash, can be Silverlight. We have a lot of stuff up there. So I'll pass the word on to Bram, and he'll be talking about HTML5 and object-oriented JavaScript.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Bram. I'm front-end developer at These Days, and since FrameRateFest, I'm a little bit focused on HTML5 and new technologies and how I can improve myself and my coding in JavaScript to improve performance and the complete experience of websites. So. Are there any front-end developers in the room? Okay, and it's mostly HTML or also JavaScript? Mostly, yeah, okay. Anybody experienced with object-oriented JavaScript, wrote it themselves, or mainly used it from APIs and stuff? Okay, so why do we need object-oriented JavaScript, and why do we need it with HTML5? Well, there's a lot of new JavaScript APIs and possibilities in HTML5, like, for example, the canvas. It's like a sketchboard or a stage where you can draw and animate and do everything you want with it. And we have APIs like geolocation, local storage, WebSockets, and other stuff. And when we create an HTML5 application and we use a couple of those APIs and stuff, it's the code is going to be cluttered and messy, and we want to improve the code so we can have better performance, smaller file size, very important too. And also very important is maintenance, because when I create a JavaScript application or a JavaScript script for a website and someone else has to continue to work on it, it's messy and it's not so, not really fun. So I try to write my JavaScript as much as possible in object-oriented, in an object-oriented way, so people that are continue to work on my script will be able to read it and understand it very fast, and be able to adapt it and scale it up or use it again in other applications. So that is the main advantage of object-oriented JavaScript. I'm going to show you a small introduction to what object-oriented JavaScript is all about, because you can hear me talk about it, but you have to see it to understand it. So this is a basic literal object. I use this for namespacing because this object is completely public. Every variable you define in it, like I did in the example, is public, so you can adapt it outside of the object. And when you copy an object and you adapt the variable, it will change also in both objects. So that's why I use this as a namespacing and not as a main object to reuse. Well, then if you want to reuse an object, I'm using the constructor object. Because this one is, well, you can choose, you can make variables private and public. You can do the same with methods by using the this, by using it or not using it. So if you don't use the this prefix, the variable is private, and when you use the this, it will be public. So quite easy to understand, I think. And when you use this constructor object, you'll be able to use a very powerful option of JavaScript, naming prototype. I've seen it being used in the sitemap. When you would create a constructor object, and you will attach a method to it, like here with this.method, for each instance you make of that object, the method is implemented. So when I copy the object, I have two functions, and each object uses its own function. But when I have functions that every instance of an object can use, I can use a prototype. And then, like, if I create like 1,000 copies of one object, those 1,000 instances will always use that one function. So that means a lot less memory usage, a lot less code, a lot less, chance to get something failing or something like that. And it improves performance really good. And I'm going to show you that in the creation of the application. So. Well, how would we implement object-oriented JavaScript with HTML5? Well, first of all, when you are using HTML5 now, you should always check if the browser the client is using is supporting the tags or the possibilities you want to use. A very good check is to use Modernizer. It's a script checking every HTML5 possibility, also CSS3, also the new APIs, so everything. And it's just putting classes on your head element or your body element, and you can check really easy with CSS, or you can just do modernizer.canvas, and then you can see if canvas tag is supported. For audio and video, you can use like a Flash or a Silverlight fallback, because HTML5 isn't the enemy of Flash. A lot of people think so because, oh, you have all those new options and we don't need Flash or Silverlight. We just use HTML5. But like for video, you need to check which codec, video codec, or like audio codec the client has installed or the browser uses. So it's really messy. So you can use a Flash fallback for if the client doesn't have any codec or doesn't support the video tag. And yeah, you should use CSS resets for elements. Like, you should really check out the HTML5 boilerplate. It's a creation of Paul Irish. And yeah, there are all elements and all checks and all. It's like a really good template of how an HTML5 application should look like and should be. I'm going to talk about frame rate first, and I'm going to create a small application. And those two websites are mainly based on the canvas element. Because, yeah, it's fun. You can draw out things. You can animate. You can do really cool stuff with it. So I'm going to show you in a minute. So what's Frame Rate Fest? Frame Rate Fest is a competition from Microsoft Netherlands to, yeah, how do you call it? They want to show people how fast Internet Explorer 9 is and how good it is in running JavaScript, how fast it is. And it's really fast, believe me. So they created a little contest where you can create your own application and then send it in and get it featured on the grid. You see it's a big grid. It's like a sneak preview of what I'm going to show. But, and it has a very fancy logo on the left and a calculation of frame rate, frames per second. And when we first started on Frame Rate Fest, it was our first HTML5, our first big HTML5 project. So we really didn't know where to start and how to build it, and because it was so big, we got the briefings from the Netherlands, and we were brainstorming about how were we going to start, where are we going to start, what are we going to use, what is supported, what is good performance-wise, what is good visually. So we did a lot of brainstorming around the project, but we also did a lot of brainstorming around code, because it was all new, and the whole site was based on frames per second and frame rates, so it had to be fast, and it had to be, it had to react really good. So we started out by brainstorming and researching and looking on how to do the object-oriented JavaScript, because in previous projects, we did a lot of jQuery animations and stuff, and that's really just .animate and really cool. But for this one, we wanted to create everything ourselves, and because it's so new, we just wanted to learn and stuff. So my main tip is for when you start on HTML5 applications, don't just dive in and see what comes, but just sit back. What do you need? What do you want to have? Is that possible? In what browser does it have to work? And then start on coding. So a little example on brainstorming. We had napkins and little notebooks, and we started out drawing everything and writing down what we wanted and how do we want it to work and like those things. So I think so here you can see how we wanted to make the font for the logo. You can see a small part of my pimped keyboard at work. I'll show you frame rate first.
basically what we're saying is screw UML diagrams and all that stuff, just use napkins.
So this is FreemateFest. It hasn't been designed for this small resolution because we wanted to make a stand and say, small resolutions. It's crappy to see this, but yeah. You get a basic idea. So it's a big grid, and it's generated completely random. So we just do a call to the database. We get all 19 uploads, a bit of basic information, and we draw it on the canvas. Yeah, you see, it's really fast now because it's kind of small. That's good. You can scroll the grid, and it will generate random blocks on top, on the bottom, of any direction you're scrolling. We have a cool logo. So when we first saw the logo, we saw it was freaky and like a spider's web capturing letters. So we wanted to simulate that, and we wanted to make it interactive. So this is what we did. I'm going to show you the code in a minute so you can see how we did it. So now we have 19 uploads. I'm going to show like this one. So a nice pop-up opens. And people can see the creation of what the uploader made live on the site without any tricks or anything. I'm going to show you, people can then vote on each application through the site or through Twitter or with Facebook. And when they vote, their vote is featured on the Hall of Fame. So this is summing up of the most of the coolest applications with the most votes. And the first one is live, so people can interact with it, and and uploading a frame is just another pop-up, just upload and you get a small form. And when people are not browsing Internet Explorer 9, the text at the bottom here is changing to, hey, you're running like Firefox, try Internet Explorer 9 to experience the beauty of the web. And I hear some laughing in the room because at first we were skeptical. We were like, we have to make a site that is going to run in IE9, the new browser. We haven't used it until then. And we heard all those rumors about Firefox and Chrome implementing HTML5, and then Microsoft came with IE9, and they said they were going to use a new JavaScript engine to be much faster. And we were like, yeah, probably, but yeah, okay, we'll see. Until we actually tried it, because this site originally was made for the beta version, so that's the beta came out in September, yeah. And we started on this site, I think, beginning of November or half of October.
Yeah, around that time, I think.
It was built for the beta, and we were really amazed about the speed of Internet Explorer 9. It's the new JavaScript engine is really, really nice.
Yeah, just as a reference point, if you would open the site in, let's say, Firefox or Opera, you would get about 50% of the FPS, so maybe 40 FPS. If you put it on a bigger screen, you would get, yeah, at best 15 frames per second. So it really is fast.
Yeah, and I hear you thinking, yeah, but what tricks did you use to improve frame rates on IE9? And I can tell you very honestly, we didn't. We even dropped features in other browsers, like the animated frames and stuff, to enable the other browsers or people using other browsers to see the site in a in a way, but it's not really, really fast. How about I show you some code? I'll move this out of the way. So let's start with the logo. As you saw, it was a mesh of orbs and lines, and so that's how we visioned it. We started off with creating just a simple orb on a canvas. It had to be, you had to give it a position, width, and a radius, and a color, and it had to function independently, so you had to be able to create a new object and make it a completely different orb. So we started with that, and then we added some mouse functionality and stuff. So when you see this object, you see it's a constructor object, so you have to call it with like variable is new orb to make it copyable, or how do you call it in English? So first we initiate it, and we just set values to all variables, and then we have the render function. So wait, I'm just gonna, you know. So we have the render function, and this function is called in a loop, a big loop in the main script, and all it does is just draw the orb to the canvas at a given position. So this is how that is done. It's quite simple. So you have the context. This would be the canvas element. And the context is the get context 2D. I can show you, I'll show you that in the creation of the application. And you can add a stroke style and fill style and a line width to create the orb. So this is all new. This is to set colors and line widths on canvas. And then you can call move to, so your virtual mouse pointer will move to that position on the canvas. And then you can just say begin path, so canvas knows, okay, there's a path going to be drawn. And then arc, which is, yeah, like it's called, it's gonna create an arc, and I had it starting at 0 degrees, going 360 degrees, clockwise, it doesn't really matter here, but with a radius and a position. And then we just close a path, and we have our orb. When? Because without the fill and the stroke, we aren't going to see anything, because it's ready to be drawn, but it still has to be drawn with these two functions. So each loop this render is called, the canvas is going to be cleared, and then it has to draw itself again. And when you come near it with your mouse, it will update itself. So it will check where is the mouse position, and okay, where do I have to move? So little calculations and easing effects to animate the orb, so it's not going to be jumping to spots, but just moving really good. So that's about it, about the ORP. So a lot of JavaScript for a little ORP, but we can create all kinds of ORPs with this. We can, we can make, like every ORP identical and stuff. And I reused a bit of this object for my live application. So you'll see what I mean when I get there. Then to connect, to make a letter, we needed lines. It's the same story. So we created a line ORP. And this line ORP has, this line object has two ORPs bound to it. So a starting and an end ORP. And it will update itself. The same render function called in the same loop. So when one of the ORPs moves, the line will just follow the ORPs. And then we can start building letters. We have to define each letter with lines and ORPs. But here's a little vision of how that's made. So each letter has an interval that's kind of the same as the render function, does quite the same. And then the update position, same story. So you see there's always the same structure used in objects. So that's the logo. So you see the lines in the letters and the lines in the background are the same object. The ORPs used in all the letters are the same object. Okay, so what about the grid? So the grid is created randomly. We just do a call to the database, to the backend, a .NET backend, and it returns a JSON with the information about the blocks. And we have three types of blocks. So we have an application block, we have a claim block, and we have a kind of those REST pieces. And it's all the same object, really. I'm gonna go through it a bit quicker. Block, okay, so just the same init. And then here's something that I can't really understand. You have this canvas object, and you can draw stuff on them, but you can't really know where they are unless you store it in JavaScript. So like with the hover states, I don't know if you saw. So there's a little plus sign on the right bottom for each application. But that's not just saying this block.hover, because that's not working. You have to say, I'm hovering over my canvas. This is my mouse position. Am I hovering over anything? And just do a call to the blocks and say, hey, mouse position is here. Any blocks where I'm hovering over? And yeah, if it is, hey, okay, you're hovering over me, I'll show the little rectangle, this one, fill rect, so it will create just like the arc, but this one will create a little square. And then you can use clear rect to delete a certain rectangle from your canvas. And yeah, you have to say the starting x, starting y, and end x, end y to know how big the block has to be, or the rectangle has to be. Then we were thinking about, the grid. So we know how to build it, but are we going to pre-render a big grid and then let the user be able to scroll over the grid, or are we going to make it more hybrid and more alive by deleting blocks that are not visible? And so we did little tests with them, and yeah, the live grid was much more was much faster, so we chose that one. So every block can check his position and can check if it has to be removed or not, and then pass it through the main object, and then that will be deleted from the array of blocks. So the grid is a simple looping for the creation of each grid. You see block is new block, so all blocks are created. An interval to pass through to the blocks to let them check their position and add new blocks where possible. And then the click and the hover states. So, okay. So that's the main functionality of FrameRageFest that I wanted to show you, because there's a lot of code. I can scroll through it. This is one of the four JavaScript files. So you see, it's 2,200 lines, so it's a lot. But I don't think we could make it any smaller, because it looks, maybe it doesn't look like that much work, but like the hovering and like the click, you have to check the positions and you have to pass it through, so it builds up, and then you have the pop-up and stuff, so there's a lot of additional JavaScript. I'll start on the creation of the little HTML5 app, if that's okay with you. I created a little app called Gravitron. Some small orbs, and they all have a gravitational field, and drawing lines behind them, and so you get this little cool application. It's looking cool on the big screen. So, where do we start? That's a question. I'm going to just close this bunch of files. Oh yeah, I have a mouse. Nice. Okay, so, really easy. Just a basic index.html with a couple of scripts I added. I pre-added them because of time. So you see here Graviton 2.0. Because I called it 2.0 because I made it already for the FrameRageFest as an example. But now I really did it object-oriented, and I want to show you what the advantage is in performance between the app that I built now and the app that I built for FrameRageFest. So we have a couple of JavaScripts, and I pre-added some functionality. I'm just going to open my snippets, because I hope you understand that I'm not going to type everything, because then I really don't have enough time. So, can't I? Okay. What I usually start with is how do you call it in English? Putting all my JavaScript in like a wrapper that can't really communicate with the outside, and the outside can't really communicate with the inside, just to make sure that my piece of JavaScript is okay and isn't affected by any other scripts in the document. So what I do is I call an anonymous function This technique is used in jQuery and other frameworks too, so pretty nice. With a couple of variables, and they're passed here. So I just pass the main variables, and I pass jQuery because I want to use jQuery. And you can see here undefined, and it's not passed here, so I really know it's undefined. Okay, so let's start. I have this, as you can see in the HTML, I have a lot of scripts here. So what are they? They are objects. Okay, planet, color picker, and canvas. Let's start with the canvas, because that's the main functional object. Really fast canvas object, a constructor object, so I can create as much individual canvases as I want. I use a prototype, so each instance of the canvas will use this one function and not implement the init function in each instance. And then I have a simple init preparation and some bind and unbind for events and a clear statement. Gonna do this. So very simple. What I do in the constructor function is start with nulling all variables, like display.l is null because we haven't had an object yet, and like this print ID is nothing. So like I did here, and then you get all these things nulled. Hey. Okay, so on my init, I like I said in comment, I wanna pass three variables. Oh no, I didn't. Oops. So I wanted to pass three variables, and that would be the ID of the element, the width, and the height. Very simple. Okay. So, but I wanted to make sure I could pass them in several ways, like in an object or just as strings. So I had a little check for it. Very simple. It just checks if the passed object is a. It's not readable like this, but you can read it in the txt and the txt. So it will check if it's a string and a number, and else it will check in the object if it's the right thing, and throw an error if not. And I need to call this dot prepare. And in here, I want to prepare my element. So I want to have an element. I want to check if it's existing. Get elements by ID, this dot ID. And l.width is the given options here. So I did a couple of checks here just to make sure it is a canvas and the canvas is supported. And here you can see the context. So we have the canvas dot get context 2D to get the real drawing API for the canvas. Then we have some functionality to bind and unbind events, but I'm gonna go over them quite fast. It's just the element attach event or add event handler and some checking. So as you can see, I just see if it's a string and it's a function for the callback and stuff. Unbind is the same. So I'm going to go over that fast. And then to clear a canvas, there is not really a function to clear. You can use a clear rect, and you can just set it width and height for your canvas. Or you can just do a quick resize of the canvas. You can do it like this. So, I added this too much. Okay. So you can just do this functionality like so, and just equal its width to its width. So it wouldn't really resize, but it would trigger the clear event. But that's not supported in all browsers. So the best way is to just null the width and then just reset the width. Okay, so my canvas is done now. A lot of functionality, but most of them is checking if all parameters are correct and stuff. So as you saw in the application, each orb has a different color, so I created a small color picker. So really simple color picker object, and can get a color. It can, you can pick a color, and the pick is going to rewrite the get, so you get a real RGB value, and you can get a random. So in the init, in the constructor, I'm just defining all available colors. So you can just add colors and stuff, no problem. And then in the get, I will just select a color you have passed. And I don't know if you have noticed, but I'm not giving up, I'm not entering any arguments in my function, because that's not really necessary. JavaScript provides an argument, and that's really that is containing all given arguments. So I just take the first argument, and then it doesn't matter how much arguments I pass with the function; it wouldn't give any error. And then, so here you can see it's not really readable. So I check if the color is a member of the this.colors. I don't use eval anymore, because eval is evil, like Paul Irish says. It's really slow, and it really slows down your application, and it's crappy. So I just use this notation, and you can use a dot notation, but then you have to use the eval because of your argument. But you can use array notation, I call it, to check if the argument is in the object. So I don't have to loop through all things and start comparing. And I just return the color in the get, in the pick. Like I said, I'm just rewriting the color. This is quite basic JavaScript, so I'm not going to spend very much time with this. So just check if there is an argument, get the color, else just return false. So yeah, leave it, and then return color in RGB notation. Okay, and then my random function, also quite simple. I get a random number, and I check in my all, so in my array of possible colors, if it exists, and then returns the pick, and the pick is going to get, and then, okay. So now I have my color picker. The next one is a planet, because I called it planet because it reminds me of planets with gravitational fields. And, yeah, the application is not doing very much right now. Oh, this one, I'm gonna close this. So I can't really show anything. So the planet, well, the planet is just, like I said, is a kind of the same as the orb object. So I have my resets of all variables, really simple. And you see here, I use a literal object for position and color, just so I can do this dot position dot x and this dot color dot some value. It's more like a fancy thing than really useful, but I just wanted to show that you could use it in something like this. Then in the init, I'm just like with all other objects, I'm just passing through values and setting positions and stuff. Positions are passed as an object, so I can just do position.x, position.y. So that's basically it. And then here are some calculations, because each planet has a certain mass and a certain radius, and I wanted to make it a little bit real. So I looked up on Wikipedia what the real gravitational formula was, and I simplified it a bit so I could use just the mass of my planet that I want to calculate the g-force from, and the opposing planet, so the planet responding to the gravitation, and then just calculate the distance between the planets. That's this calculation, power that by 2. So this is the g-force calculation. This is basic Pythagoras. I have x position of my planet and x position of the opposing planet and y position. So I can square root the power of 2 of the x and y positions. Then the render. So this is the real canvas drawing. As you saw in the application, you have the planets, and they draw lines behind them. So you have like that Tron style moving planets, moving orbs. Thought it would be cool. So what I did is, this function, this is quite cool. You can save your canvas state. So you can draw something on your canvas and then just say, okay, save this state. I'm gonna change all my colors, and then do restore, and it just redraws everything you had, but with the different colors. So very cool. Saves a lot of time and calculations. So I said fill style, stroke style, and line width. The move to function again, and then the arc again, and like in the orb I said before. And I'm using these lines that I've passed to this function. This is another canvas on the background. So I try to separate a lot of drawings to different canvases, and then combining them to one canvas to show. So you can create a canvas with a very beautiful drawing and then just hide it. Another one with like a little orb circling on the canvas, and you can combine them. I'm going to show you in a minute. But the advantage of this technique is that the two hidden canvases don't require as much calculations and power from your computer as the visible ones. So you can do very fast drawing on a canvas and then just draw the canvas on a new canvas with a frame rate of 30 frames per second. So it will lower your processing speed for your computer. So that's another performance improvement. And then just a simple update position. And I forgot the lines that I passed here. So okay. Then update position is quite the same as I showed in the frame rate first orb object. So we just have the add some movement speeds to the orbs and have it calculate. Yeah, it calculates the distance between planets and g forces from each planet, and then applies the gravity. Yeah, small calculations to create the gravity field and apply the forces to them. So I see I'm running out of time. So I'm just going to show you the end of the custom. So I have all these settings in a literal object, so I can just use it as a namespace. These are the settings for my canvases and for timeouts to render. Radiuses for default radiuses for the planets, and then I do bam.init because bam is my main object. Bam.init is going to initiate everything, is going to create the canvas for the main canvas and the lines canvas. It's going to create an array of planets and it's going to create a main planet, so there's always one planet visible. And that's the bam.earth. And then I do timer.start. It's just a timeout looping at a certain speed. I clear my canvas with the canvas function. And then I do context.drawImage. And that's the functionality I talked about, drawing another canvas on a main canvas. So you can do drawImage, document.getElementById, the canvas element. Starting from x 0, starting from y 0, and it will draw the canvas on your main canvas. Really simple. Yeah, and then I just loop through all my planets and update the positions and render them. Is there anything really cool? Yeah, this is the click event, so I used the bind on the canvas, like here. I just pass click, bam, event click. So this is just like an add event listener to an element. And you can get your X and Y position and get and create a new planet. This is one function, yeah. This is a function to calculate a random between two numbers, so I can where did I use it? So I can calculate, I think for the mass and stuff, like here, radius, so I can have a radius between 2 and 6. Really simple. And at the bottom, there's a document.ready from jQuery to initiate everything. And that's that was really fast, but you get an idea about how object-oriented JavaScript can help you create very fast and cool applications. So I think we're through.
Any questions?
Yeah? Inheritance? Yeah, like I said, with the prototype, is that what you mean? So you can, or do you mean creating a main object, another object, and make that first object inherit from the other? Well, yeah, you can, by just using the prototype, doing object.prototype is another object.prototype.method, and then the first object is inheriting that function from the other. So that's another power of prototype.